Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Atawehis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. This station's only means of support is through donations and purchases of the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library, which includes lifetime online access to a printable 1,000-page intelligence briefing and a worldwide indigenous prophecy encyclopedia. Now, folks, there's nothing else like this collection on the planet. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files and 222 folders. It includes the Prophecy Keeper's Prepper's Self-Reliance files and all of our previous over 100 Prophecy Keepers interviews. So head on over to prophecykeepers.com right now and have a free sneak peek today of two-thirds of the Prophecy Keepers trilogy and a peek of the dashboard of the Prophecy Keepers Wisdom Treasury Vault. Osio Ginalii Tahiju Toigu, which means, hello cousins, I'm fine, how are you? This is your old buddy Bluewater coming to you from the Cumberland Plateau in east central Tennessee, the ancient home of the Aniuntikwalaski, the people of the lightning and thunder, or the military protectors of the old Cherokee Nation.
Well, hello, everybody. This is your old buddy Bluewater coming to you from Booger County in mysterious Ozarks and Mid-America. This is the Predictions for 2005 show, Dr. Robert Ghost Wolf, airing for the first time on January 1st, 2005. And welcome to the show, and away we go through the looking glass. How are you doing, Dr. Ghost Wolf? Say hello to the folks.
Well, I think I'm doing fine. It's hard to tell these days.
Yeah, no kidding.
What you think is happening in one moment changes in the next.
Yeah.
Welcome to virtual life.
Yeah, really. So the envelope, please, as those of you that remember Johnny Carson. Who's that character he played? The great, he put on the Swami turban.
Oh, with the Swami hat with the envelope to his head.
Yeah.
The name of the guy.
They'd always have the answer. They'd give him the answer. He'd read the answer, and then he'd give the question.
Yeah, but sometimes Ed McMahon fooled him. And that's when we had funny moments on the Carson Show.
But, well, I'll tell you this.
So tonight's about prophecy.
Yep.
Because it's New Year, it's not Christmas. And, do you remember Nestor Night Owl?
Uh-uh.
Well, Nestor Night Owl is, he lived here for a long time in Santa Fe. He's been around forever. He used to hang out with RT. He now lives in Hawaii, but he's probably coming back. And the funny thing here is I was talking to Nestor Christmas Eve on Hawaii, on his little hut there, up there on the mountain. And we were talking about prophecies and things that I saw, because I always check things with everybody else to see if I totally lost theirs. It's probably a reality. And because you can't control prophecy. You don't go in and, you know, there's a difference between prophecy and prediction, for one thing. Prophecy is seeing a high probability of something occurring based on the way things are and based on a cosmic calendar that's very old. Where a prediction is more like seeing something straight in front of you on the road. And so Nestor and I were talking, and we both were being awakened by the same, this is Christmas Eve, man, the same kind of dream for a couple of weeks about this major disaster happening someplace in the Orient.
Ah.
And he was going, I don't know. He says, maybe it's Tokyo. So he says, it's like there's millions of people. It's just totally destroyed. And I said, yeah, but I said, but how do we know if it's Tokyo? I said, you know, I said, I've seen Oriental people. I said, but I see a lot of faces, and I see a lot of destruction, and I see a lot of water, and I see a lot of... Anyway, we got through with that conversation, and we talked about many other things, of course. But then to awaken Sunday morning to CNN and seeing this destruction all over the place was a little bit disarming.
Well, what weirded me out was the year before and the year after my first wife passed away. I smelled, she and I, before she passed away, she and I smelled tobacco smoke in a house that never been smoked in. And then the year after she passed away, on December 26th, my new wife and I smelled it, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning, same time, same station, you know, 1,800 miles away in Tennessee in a house that had never been smoked in. So I've been asking everybody, what does December 26th mean to you ever since then? Well, I think I just found out.
Yeah, we just found out.
Yeah. And, well, you know, Nostradamus predicted some kind of an event that would happen in the middle of the Indian Ocean. And John Hogan and I will be talking about that a little bit on next week's show. But,
he's definitely the man who knows about Nostradamus.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So much so that I think that scares a lot of the media guys.
Yeah, yeah.
But, I mean, I've known John for years. He not only is very clear about what he says and how he looks at it, but he's also a great humanitarian. I mean, he really is a caring human being. But he's a man of his own thoughts.
Well, you can't do the prophecies and you know, risk, everybody that does them, that has anything to do with them, you know, risk their reputation, because eventually they're going to be trashed. It's happened to me, it's happened to you, it's happened to Art Bell, it's happened to Chokosh Ahoho, the Chumash elder, Thunder, Rowan Thunder, you name them, everybody's, you know, everybody's had their reputations trashed over this.
So, yeah, well, when I do mine, I'm going to start giving out a little insurance policy.
Oh, really?
And a statement that says that we're not responsible.
Yeah, really.
For anything. I mean, you know, it's like the way that Native people, which is the way I was taught, and you know that, but the way Native people do prophecy, I was taught to go to the place where I see the vision or something. And the interesting thing is, you can calculate after a while approximately how near something is to occurring because you develop an intuitive sense. But there really is, how do these people keep coming up with all these dates, times, hours, and minutes? You know, I've never really understood that, because how can you tell? I mean, it's like the movie Somewhere in Time. And unless there's something there that you see that would trigger a precise date, where you see a clock on the wall or a newspaper headline, it's hard to tell.
Well, speaking of trigger, did your horses know? Because my dog sure knew. All week last week, you know, we got this little Yorkshire Terrier, and we have a poodle mix. And the Yorkie, he's just standing there all week long looking at us, you know.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, and then this happens. Sometimes he growls, sometimes he barks. And, you know, his water dish is full. He's just acting weird. And he's acting like that again. And we've got people on the Native Prosody Council. You know, there are some people, some of them are saying, hey, I'm feeling, and we're recording this, you know, on New Year's Eve. And yesterday, a couple people were saying, hey, I still feel like something's going to happen. And last night, I kind of felt like something's going on here. And then, you know, my Yorkshire Terrier, Aussie bloke,
huh.
You know, we got him around the same time that Aussie bloke scare was going on about the meteorites, or the meteors. And he's acting weird again, standing there looking at me, just trying to tell me, hey, something's going on. So I don't know.
Well, I've been getting calls from people all over the place, of course. And they've been talking a lot about their pets being overly affectionate or super attached to them.
Mm-hmm.
Like they can't go anywhere that the animals aren't, like, right by them. So, yeah, the animals are feeling a sense of anxiety. And, you know, the other thing is when something of this magnitude happens, there's a vibration that goes out into the air that makes, I mean, the whole globe feels it. Everybody feels the anxiety and the horror and the shock. And I think that, you know, especially, you know, to say, well, welcome to the Christmas cataclysm.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think my wife forgot about it, but I think she said something in the last couple of weeks about that she had a dream and was told there's going to be some kind of disaster.
Well, the thing that's got me at this point is I think it's just the beginning of a series of events.
Mm-hmm.
It's like once something like this breaks of that magnitude, I mean, a 9.0 earthquake is amazing, okay?
Okay, yeah.
It's a global superstorm, you know, that category.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And when something like that goes in the Pacific Rim, you know it's got to have effects throughout the entire region, because
mm-hmm.
that whole rim is connected.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is that over the years, you know, when we're watching the El Ninos and everything go on, when something happens on that side, within 2 weeks, something happens on this side.
Yeah.
When there's major storms on that side, 2 or 3 weeks later, you have major storms going on this side. So it's almost like just like a pendulum that swings back and forth.
What did you hear about, you know, Stan and Holly Dale? Did you hear about Stan's prediction? He's been watching the ocean surface temperature in that area. And he for the last 2-3 weeks, he was saying, hey, something's up.
Yeah. Stan's pretty reliable.
I hadn't heard about it until after it happened.
He's pretty reliable.
Yeah.
Stuff. And his readings are not.
Yeah.
He's one of those guys who's learned you just say what you see.
Uh-huh. Yeah, they're really trying to help folks prepare.
Yes, they are. They're very, very involved in that.
Which is how this is how you get not afraid, is by arming yourself with fact figures and, you know, what to do, where to go, water tap's not going to be working anymore? No problem. I'll just drop my Katadyn filter right here in this mud puddle and we'll have a good time.
Well, I think people have got to adjust their reaction level because we're going to be seeing a lot of things.
Oh, yeah.
Especially between now and 2009, according to our calendar. If we go to the Hebrew calendar, it's the year, what, 57, 70-something?
Mm-hmm.
The thing is that we're talking about a series of events, and I have been told for years, started out with the elders and then started out with my own readings, where 2005 was a kickoff point.
Mm-hmm.
Things would go topsy-turvy.
I was told back in 98 that 2005 would be known in the future as the year of the great havoc. And of course, I start looking for things to start happening in September, and because, you know, Jewish New Year, Cherokee New Year, September. Sure enough, here comes, you know, three big hurricanes, and I haven't been disappointed. So, I mean, I'm not glad all this is happening, but true to form, 2005 is shaping up as the year of the great havoc.
Well, you know, everything in the play has been like, the script is written. And people have shifted to a point where some of the things that are going on in the world right now, on a, let's say on the political level, never could have happened 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
People wouldn't have allowed them to happen. There was too much independent thought. There was too much free will. There was too much, there was too much self-awareness to let this kind of thing go. These kinds of things go on, and you see going on in politics. It's almost like watching a circus act.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's like, you know, did the guy win the election or didn't he win the election? And, you know, Volovosha coming in, and then we found out that the guy really actually technically didn't win this part of the election, but because of the way that we structured this, he did win. I mean, it's like you're looking at this stuff on the news and you're going, what are they trying to tell me?
Yeah.
You know, I think people, you know, they're in such a spin right now with just basic survival. We know that things are terrible all over the world, but here in the great cornucopia of life called America, things are pretty bad on levels that are not getting into the media. I mean, independent businesses are doing terrible. People are in debt. They can't keep up with things. I mean, they're coming out with all these different wonder temporary band-aid things like, well, just refinance your house. Which, that's a great move. So you move from a position of sovereignty to being in more debt. And it takes the pain out of it for a year or so, and then all of a sudden, You have at the end of 10 years this huge balloon thing that they throw on you. So we've seen a lot of that.
And if you don't have more than, you know, a lot of people don't know that if you don't have more than 20% equity, I mean, they can foreclose on your house anytime they want to, even if you are having your payments up to date.
Right.
You know.
Just because they choose to and they sell it to somebody else, it says we're not playing it this way.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen them do that to people. And then they just send you a letter and you have, like, you know, 30 days to respond.
Yeah.
You know, I know one fellow who was trying to work out a situation and they couldn't find the person who he was paying the mortgage to. I mean, the person literally disappeared. And so they did all the appropriate things. They did all the right things. They put up a bond. They did all that. And then suddenly they got a letter. You have 30 days to pay this mortgage in full, or else we're going to foreclose. And there was just no time to react. It was just, but you're seeing a lot of that right now. It's like everything right now is a big blackjack game in Las Vegas.
Oh, yeah.
I'll see you.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Friends, this is Will Bluewater. Would you think twice about defending yourself or a loved one from an intruder? In this day and age, would you dream of leaving your doors unlocked at night for fear of being burglarized or even attacked or worse? Would you? But when it comes to our own bodies, the doors to our houses are wide open all the time. the very air we breathe and the food we eat, especially here in the United States, creates free radicals that cause us to age and in some cases cause illness, some of which are deadly. Now, for the first time in history, there's a supplement called Protandim that is listed on the U.S. government's PubMed.gov website, with many peer-reviewed studies all showing that Protandim is a proven killer of the free radicals that are aging, and in some cases even killing us. Now, I'm not talking about killing one molecule of free radical per one molecule of antioxidants like the stuff we've been taking. I'm talking about killing 1 million free radicals per second, per molecule, and this is the very same antioxidant your own body produces. Protandim supercharges your body to create much more than it does without Protandim. There's an old saying that we are warned about in the scriptures. That's the attitude, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. So let me ask you, how much money do you spend on food a day? If you're out shopping or at the beach, would you think anything of spending a buck or even more on a can of soda? If there was a vending machine that sold something that killed what was aging you or even killing you, would you even hesitate to spend a buck and a half a day? Well, now there is such a vending machine, and it's sitting right in front of you. It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now. Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Hi, friends. This is Will Blue Otter. I have a message here from 1975 from John Wayne. It comes right out of today's headlines. So you Indian folks who are following the progressive trend in politics, you're following the people that supported slavery. You're following the people that have enslaved you ever since the Civil War. Listen to John Wayne.
You know, it's a funny thing, the Indians now, this AIM group have started something that now they're against me for some reason, but I am the only man in pictures that always gave them their human dignity. I never was in a picture. I never allowed myself at any time to do anything that would take their human dignity away from them, and that to me is the most important thing in a man's. I have found that a certain type that calls himself a liberal, and I always thought I was a liberal. I came up terribly surprised one time when I found that I was a right-wing conservative extremist. When I have listened to everybody's point of view that I ever met, and then decide how I should feel. I mean, but this so-called new liberal group, Jesus, they never listen to your point of view, and they make a decision as to what you think, and they're articulate enough and in control of enough of the press to force that image out for the average person. For some reason, maybe it's these pictures, they have not been able to do that with me. In spite of what they say, people have not taken sides that I'm a, you know, it hasn't affected my career in popularity, let's say. In spite of the fact that they've tried to make it do it. There isn't a hell of a lot that we can do to change human behavior. We keep making laws to try and change human behavior. You can't do it. I think you can accept it and feel how you would feel in that position.
You're being conned into Keynesianism and socialism now. But it isn't going to stop the selfishness of human behavior. It isn't going to stop the greed. If you take $20 and give a dollar to every son of a bitch in a room and come back a year later, one of the bastards will have most of the money. I mean, it's just human nature, and they're not going to they're not going to whip it with a lot of laws. I think when you make people conscious, as communication gets better, and you make people conscious of somebody in trouble, starving or something like that, the average person will help. But of course now they've got so damn many charities, and there's so much professionalism. You know, there's if you have a charity, you hire some professionals to work up the charity, and by the time you get the money, you get $4 for the recipient and $400 for the administrators. So I mean, Christ,
I think there are people who try to affect a thinking where they know more than some other son of a bitch, and try to put a false impression on what human nature is. Christ's sakes, we have proven that we go back to hope at the first opportunity. Just throw out a little fish and bam, they're out there ready to grab it. So we are optimistic. We have to be optimistic. Christ, what else would there be in life if you lose optimism?
Well, people don't understand. They don't own anything anyway. You know, I believe the state of Minnesota, maybe Nebraska, both still have as part of their constitution that there's not supposed to be anything but allodial land titles. But, you know, everybody has feudal title. You know, and fee simple title, which is feudal law. That's, you know, you pay rents in the form of taxes. I mean, you know, find out if you own your land or not. Just skip paying taxes 1 year. You'll find out who owns it. That's what eminent domain is all about. And, you know, Cherokee swapped, you know, 12 million acres east of the Mississippi that they held with Aboriginal title for, about, I don't know, maybe 5 million acres plus some money. I can't remember the amount of acres. But the thing that stuck out when I was looking at the history was that it was a fee simple title, which means they didn't own it. Congress owns it.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, it goes back to Grandpa Wallace way back in the beginning of the 1990s. I remember him up there talking and going, "You don't really own anything. You have to understand that on a dollar bill they made a mistake because they forgot how to spell, because it's supposed to say 'In gold we trust.'"
Yeah.
And how does it feel to be on the reservation? Because you're all on the reservation now.
Oh, yeah.
The government owns everything. You own nothing. You know, and then also there's been a big shift in consciousness with people regarding their true spiritual awareness. There was so much going on for a while in the latter part of the last century that people got confused with how many different road signs there were.
Yep.
And people compromised things. And so everything got really chaotic, you know. And then, meanwhile, while things were going on, and it seemed like every time we went away on vacation or a holiday, we'd come back and the administration would have all these presidential edicts that they passed while everybody was on holiday. Remember that?
Executive orders.
Yeah, here's an executive order. We're now turning over the lands of Yellowstone to the International Park, blah, blah, blah.
The smoke and, mountains.
You know, and I remember pulling up to Yellowstone once at 7:30 in the morning. I was the first one in line. And I pulled up and there was a sign that it says, you know, that essentially this was property of the United Nations.
Yeah, International Biosphere, Smoky Mountain, so the old Cherokee domain has been given to the UN.
Mm-hmm.
National Heritage Rivers Act. All the rivers, basically, that flow into, with the watershed that flow in the Mississippi River, the UN's got a right to come in and fence them all off. You know, I think the only watershed that isn't included in the Heritage Rivers Act is anything that flows into the Rio Grande.
Mm-hmm.
Because they couldn't, you know, float that with Mexico or something, who knows. It's amazing.
Well, you know, and the other thing too, when you lose that strength in your spirituality, you don't do the ceremony, you don't do the sweat lodge, you don't do the breathing, you don't do the meditation, what happens is you very easily become steeped again in, shall we call it Maya, and, you know, beta thoughts, and all you're doing is watching TV. I mean, like, you know, what do they do in America? What was that news commentator who said, why do I have to have a president that tells me he's just like me? How can he be just like me? I mean, you're just like me. You watch television 12 hours a day. So everybody's like, the only thing that they're watching is media news. It's the same six stories, if you've ever really looked at it. It's the same six stories that they play all day long, 24 hours a day. You see the same clips, the same footage. And it's all about this political particular agenda that's got nothing to do with news. It's like I go, well, how come they're doing the same six stories 24 hours a day? There's something else going on, you know?
Yep.
And as that goes on and you become more and more apathetic, what happens is you don't notice those strange little moments, which is something that I have been very aware of and I get a lot of letters about. Part of the reason why I'm calling this particular group of visions through the looking glass, because a lot of people are experiencing strange occurrences with missing time. A lot of people are experiencing seeing things in the sky that a small group of people see and nobody else seems to see it. A lot of people are seeing relationships dissolve. A lot of people are seeing the effects of, now we're going into the third generation, that they have destroyed the family structure in this country. And so you've got these kids running wild on the street with no traditional beliefs that have been passed down to them. They're strung out on drugs. They've got all sorts of psychological problems because of genetic foods and the things they're putting in foods and spraying foods, the chemtrails they're spraying from the sky, the stuff they're putting in the water, everything from fluoride to you name it that they put into the water so that you don't get cavities, which is like ridiculous, because all you need is a tiny little drop of fluoride to help prevent cavities. The amount that they put in there is ridiculous. We've been talking for years now about things going on in the rivers and in the forest dying, the old trees just disappearing, animals disappearing, migrations of birds and whales going cattywampus, seasons being mixed up. I mean, we've been watching this thing going on for a while.
Yeah.
And yet people are into denial for the most part. And as tragic as something like this tsunami is, it's a wake-up call. It lets us know how puny we are.
Sure does.
I mean, there's nothing you can do in the face of these kind of catastrophes. You know, and there's nothing you can do when a volcano goes off. There's nothing you can do when, I mean, just the other day, what is today, New Year's Eve, so 3 days ago, they showed pictures on the news of 14 inches of water flowing through the streets of Los Angeles. What they didn't show on the news was that they had to evacuate the people from the center of town in Sedona, Arizona, because of the floods.
Well, you know who predicted that? Somebody in the Hopi Sanam said, who's it, Andrew? Said that that some of the folks in Sedona would have to be careful, it might even be flooding.
Mm-hmm. So we're seeing all of these different things.
Oh, snow in the United Arab Emirates yesterday.
Ah.
All right. Going in Arabia. Men. Like Noah I said, winter, summer, all mixed up. It's really weird.
Well, the other thing, too, is, you know, it's amazing how the schedules work. It's like, if you want to know what's going on in the world and what's going to happen next week, you just got to go to Walmart.
Well, it's like almost 7.
Walmart tells you that, okay, Christmas is over.
Oh, yeah.
Now we're on diets.
Yeah.
And all the clothes that were there 3 days ago have now changed, and they got all these tank tops and bathing suits. It's like, what are they telling people to go to the tropics?
Well, here in southern Missouri, it's been like 68 2 days in a row. You know, we have to open the front door because it's too hot in the house.
Yeah. And we were seeing a lot of that.
Oh, we had 2 weeks of, you know, down to the teens, and all, now all of a sudden it's springtime.
And then on TV, I thought it was kind of funny because I've been preparing this information and getting it out to people. And when I go to TV, what I'm seeing on TV is the Armageddon. You know, they even, you know, did the title thing, and they started calling everything End of Days. Okay?
And they showed the Omega Code tonight on cable.
You know, so I'm like, okay, well, that's cool. These people are on my website.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like when Art Bell took the quickening and I had to fight with him about it, you know. The thing here is that, you know, this is an interesting slant on Armageddon. Essentially, Armageddon is a Judeo-Christian myth. It talks about the end of all the earth. It talks about this total destruction. It talks about the armies of the Antichrist fighting the armies of the Christ in the fields of Harmageddon, okay? And Harmageddon is Harm Mountain, Mageddon. Mageddon is Mageddon, Mount Mageddon, the fields of Armageddon. And the fields of Armageddon were particularly for thousands of years from the times of Babylonia on, the site of a lot of major battles and a lot of bloodshed. It's where one faith met the other faith, and where one fate of a country was determined upon the outcome of the battle. Okay, I mean, the Egyptians fought there, the Romans fought there, the Babylonians fought there, the Assyrians fought there, the Hebrews fought there. That's where David slew Goliath. I mean, it's all about the end time, and it all talks about this term, apocalypse. Well, it's really interesting when you get into Apocalypse that was written by John, and John wrote it in a cryptic alphabet, and he used Greek because he had to hide from the Romans, and he used certain terminologies that would have at the time been very familiar to the Bible scholars or the scholars of the sacred text, more correctly, in that period. They would understand what he meant by his little terminologies. And the term apocalypse in Greek, ancient Greek, actually means the unveiling. That's what it means. It means the unveiling. The taking away of the shrouds that cover the truth. So this time of the apocalypse, according to the true definition of the ancient text, is a time of the burning away of falsehood. It's the revealing of the truth, which falls into line with the Hopi prophecy of purification, a great purification, which falls in line with the true teachings of the prophet, the Christos, in that as the Christos energy emerges, and there's this integration of energies during this time, what happens is that falsehood cannot exist in the energy of the Christ. Okay? And that all things are revealed. All the masks are removed. All the games are seen clearly. All the corruption becomes put out on the table, so to speak. Now, you know, at the time that was written, because, you know, that was thousands of years ago, they didn't have internet. They didn't have instant access to have an event happen somewhere in Thailand and for it to be on worldwide media 7 minutes later, or as it was going on.
Well, how else can somebody walk into a temple in Jerusalem and declare himself to be God and have the whole world see it, which is prophesied?
Mm-hmm. And so now we're seeing this whole thing put on the table. So we're seeing, as the true reading of Apocalypse says, we're seeing the unveiling. And we're seeing these people who have been programmed with a myth, and there's a point that I'm going to get to with this, of it's the end, you know. Well, that's okay, because if we go back through history, even in this country, how many times has the second coming been predicted? How many times has the end of the world been predicted? And we've seen whole religions created around it. I mean, you know, we can go back to just like, for instance, in 1843, there was a farmer in New York whose name was Miller?
Yeah, I was going to say, you're talking about the Millerites.
Yeah, and he predicted in 1843, on April whatever, Jesus was going to come down, it was going to be the end of the world, and that was it. Well, when it didn't happen, they said, ah, we have no information, it's happening next October.
Yeah.
Next October in 1844, and then when it didn't happen again, well, he just like sort of slipped off into obscurity, and the Millerites became the Seventh-day Adventists.
Right.
You know? And so, we see this going on and on and on.
Joseph Smith said that Jesus was going to come in 1890, if he was, you know, and he was told that he would see God again. If he lived,
well, there's a very interesting thing to that.
But Jesus did show up, but he showed up at Walker Lake.
Well, he showed up at a ghost dance.
He showed up at the Walker Lake, Nevada, at the ghost dance.
That's right. And it was 1890.
That's right. 1890 was the year. It was 86.
That's right. 1890, Bavoca was there.
Was
and there's even documentation to this for those who think, like, we're just shooting off the hip and coming up with crazy things. But there, if you go into the archives of the Boston Globe, which was a prominent newspaper back then, which is where I got my research information on this when I was writing things about the ghost dance, they have interviews with army officers and dignitaries from the government that were there and talk about some of the strange phenomena events that happened. They talk about this fellow that came out of an orange donut, get that, and walked down what appeared to be a stairway. Well, you know, we're talking about a bunch of Plains Indians, okay?
Mm-hmm.
How would they have whatever they needed to build a scaffolding? Okay? And that when this fellow came down, he spoke to all the tribes, and all the tribes understood his words, so he obviously could not have been a Native American. I remember reading these articles, you know?
Now, this happened on a military reservation. Telegraph traffic going back and forth from Nevada to Washington, and it excited the whole country, and it ended up shortly thereafter with a big scare, and actually a message.
And they called it the Messiah Movement.
Yeah, you know, and somebody added to it and scared a bunch of white people.
Like, well, let's kill all Indians.
You know? Yeah, yeah.
Because they're bringing, I mean, like, whenever you said ghost dance, it brought up a fear in everybody, you know. But the point of the matter is that at that ceremony, because the Shigartwins came up from South America, and the Kenichita Kenichiwa, the great white chief, who was the designate representative of the prophet, spoke, told them he was not the prophet, that the prophet was coming, they had to prepare, they had to continue the ceremonies, and then he picked a circle of, I believe it was 12.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
It is so great to have our friend Marie Osmond back here on GMA, and she has some important information about making sure your family is prepared for natural disaster. She's the new national spokesperson for Wise Company, which makes dehydrated and freeze-dried emergency foods and food storage products. She's here to tell us about that. Marie, you've been given the opportunity to endorse probably 9 billion things over the course of your career.
True.
Why the Wise Company?
The reason I wanted to do it is because it's affordable. You can eat a meal for a dollar. It's less than school lunch. It's affordable, but really, look at what's been going on with Sandy and Katrina. I mean, what was it, $78 billion of damage done just here in New York and
right.
New Jersey.
So what is this?
What it is it's emergency meals, and you know, it's not your grandmother's kind, not the beans and rice and the gross chicken tasting garbage. This is lasagna and really good stuff, and I swear to you, why am I here talking about this? Because I know it's going to save thousands and thousands and thousands of lives. You put it under your bed, it's convenient, stick it in your closet. If something happens, I have it in my car. All you do is you open it and you add water. You don't even have to add hot water.
Right.
And it's affordable, it's convenient, it tastes really good. Taste the peaches, they're fantastic.
This is a peach?
But they're different than every other company because it's like dehydrated and freeze-dried, and they combine whatever. I swear it's fantastic. Just try it.
I'm dying right now, Marie
Osmond.
Put it
under your bed, put it in your closet, give it for Christmas to people, and save lives.
Thank you very much. Will you tell Donnie that we said we hope his rear feels better?
Well, you know, it's kind of a bummer, but I'll tell him.
Now, Marie Osmond, great having you on. The
it's
Wise
so fun
Company.
To be here.
Great to be with you.
It's always fun to be here. This is a great place.
All right.
Friends, this is Will Bluewater. If you'd like to find out more about Wise Foods, visit wisefoods.org.
And out of the 12, 11 were Chicagoan, and from South America, which is around Ecuador, I believe. That's where they are. And there was only one representative from up here, and that was Porcupine from Northern Cheyenne.
Short Bull, did you make the list?
Short Bull was the one who traveled with Porcupine.
Ah, okay.
Short Bull, sometimes called Sitting Bull, but it gets confused in history writing, was Arapaho. Okay? And it's sort of like the story of Hiawatha, because Hiawatha had a speech impediment. And so, I mean the fellow who traveled with Hiawatha, Hiawatha was his, the orator. The fellow who traveled with Hiawatha, who, you know, if we get into the depth of the story, get away from Jennings, James, Fenimore Cooper, what we're really talking about is the Gonawita.
Yep.
And the Gonawita had a speech impediment.
Yep.
And so he had his disciples speak for him.
So did Moses. That's why Joshua.
And so did Moses. So Moses and Aaron did the talking.
So did a lot of highly spiritual. They had speech impediments and limps.
I guess there's some detriments to chewing on that manna.
Like, yeah.
You know? Man is not good for your teeth. but it, you know, again, we go into this, you know, the end of days, you know, well, what does it mean? Well, when you go to the Judeo-Christian faiths, it means civilization will be annihilated, this angry God comes down, destroys everybody and everything, but, you know, but don't worry because God loves you. Okay? Don't worry, God loves you. So all you have to do is be good, but we're not going to tell you what that means. We're just going to put you out here without a field guide, and if you make a mistake, you're going to hell.
Yeah, right.
Okay? And, you know, you're sort of like, well, if God loves me, and God's this forgiving being, God loves all things, then why is God going to punish me if I don't even know that I'm doing wrong? Okay? I thought God was forgiving, you know. Okay, and I don't mean to be disrespectful or sacrilegious or anything, but it's like, it is particularly within the Judeo-Christian faith. Because when you go to the other face of the earth, you go to the third world peoples who actually far outnumber the small percentage of people that are up there doing the media programming, okay, and the dogma shows, well, there's no talk about this total destruction. There is talk about this time. There is talk about the end of days in the end of the dream as we are experiencing it, in that the world that we are seeing now no longer will be. There will be this other paradigm born. there will be this return to the sovereignty and the awareness of the being. Whether you go to the Mayan, whether you go to the Hindu, whether you go to the Dogon people, whether you go to the Aboriginals in South America, you go to the ancient Chinese beliefs, it does not exist in any other faith except Judeo-Christianism, which is this, you know, it's hellfire and brimstone.
You're talking about the end of the hedonistic Gentile system.
Well,
basically,
my question is, who are the hedonists?
Yeah, really.
Who has turned war for the purpose of religion,
yeah,
into a megabillion-dollar industry that now controls the world? How many people have been killed in the name of the Christ?
Yeah.
And was it in the name of the Christ, or was it because of political agendas?
Yeah.
Were the popes anointed, or were they placed into power?
Kill them all, God will sort them out.
Okay? You know, and when you read things like the Chilambalam, or the Popol Vuh, or even the Koran, and I know that might touch a couple of sensitivity buttons, because right now it happens to come from people who unfortunately are called people of the Middle East, and we've been programmed with a picture that everybody from the Middle East is a potential terrorist. Tell your children to run from anybody who's wearing a turban, you know. The fact of the matter is, Cherokees wore turbans. So I guess we should run from Cherokees.
We still do.
Yeah. Well, Rolling Thunder, like me, wore a beret a lot.
Uh-huh.
Just because it didn't knock off in the bushes.
Right.
While you were collecting firewood for the lodge, you know.
Warmer, too.
And it was handy. You could roll it up and put it in your pocket if it got too hot. But this fear of death, this fear of, you know, judgment, this fear of, you know, it's, and as we get into some of the Christian faith, I had an interesting conversation with a minister the other day about the teachings of the Christ. And I said, okay, and we're talking, and I said, but how much of the teachings of the Christ are in the Bible that you're quoting to me? If we're supposed to figure out what the teachings of the Christ are from what's in the Bible, there aren't that many. So where are they?
People don't remember the old red letter Bibles and just how little was in red letter, which is actual word of Jesus, supposedly.
Mm-hmm. Well, the Jesus that I know, Jesus Sananda Yeshua Kwasi Kotal, the Pale Prophet, taught nothing of what I see going on.
Right.
His teachings were teachings of love, compassion, and awareness. That was his teaching. Wasn't that why they called him the Lamb?
Feed my sheep. He didn't say, flee from my sheep. He said, feed my sheep.
Mm-hmm. He didn't say, go out and collect the wheat, the wool. He did say, however, that in the end times, you'll have to beat your plows and shears into swords. That there will be those that will persecute you for my sake. He did say that.
Yeah, he said if you don't.
And he also said about the end times.
Sell your cloak and get a sword if you need one, apparently.
And I think it's in Mark 36 where he said, Mark turns around and says to him, well, how will we know of these end times? And he responds, and I'm not reading it from anything, but he responds basically, there is no one in the heavens that knows the time of
yeah.
not even the angels, nor the Son, only the Father knows.
Well, I like the way they call the Prince of Peace when he made the statement, I came not to bring peace to the world, but a sword.
Yes.
He came to divide families, people. He came to sort. He was trying to say that, you know, if a man doesn't leave his family or his wife or whatever and come to me, then he was trying to sort people out and create a sieve. And boy, that's going on. You have the wheat have fully grown up among the tares. And you know, people talk about the rapture, but you know, the Bible says that the wicked or the tares are going to be removed from among the
the good guys. Well, that's the exact opposite of the rapture. I'd like to see how that's going to play out. You know, some of the other prophecies, like you'll seek death and you won't be able to find it. And it's going to be interesting.
You'll ask for the mountains to fall upon your head, and they will not. But then he also told us that in those days, the winters will be shortened.
Yep.
So that you will not be devastated by the effects of them. And we're seeing that now.
Who knows if we move into a fourth dimension, which a lot of people are talking about, maybe we won't be able to die. And people won't want it, and they won't be able to. A lot of really interesting...
I go into that and through the looking glass because I think a lot of people have a misconception of the fourth dimension. Life exists here on the third dimension. Life exists in the fifth dimension. The fifth dimension is essentially the level of the masters and the immortals. There is no life and death. There is no time. The fourth dimension is strictly a bridge.
In between, yeah.
It's like the elevator from one floor to the next. And what happens there is because of the nature of it, nothing ever truly manifests. So what you have is this dust storm of potential realities that are created, malformed thoughts, evil, nightmares, discombobulated thinking, God knows what. You dream of demons and monsters. It all gets caught up in this sieve, so to speak, called fourth dimension, because it can't go through the other one. And I think sometimes that may be what the white light is. Because Grandfather used to talk about the white eagle, and that you could not pass into the world of the Tantashalas, you had to go through the heart of the white eagle. And if you were not pure in thought and pure in intent, you did not go through. I don't know if you remember stories like that.
Well, I remember seeing the white eagle on the 4th of May, 1996, a cloud formation. My son and I both saw it, and lasted for about 30 seconds. The 50-mile-an-hour wind, we're on top of our trailer putting a new pad for the swamp cooler down in Moab, Utah. I found out 2 weeks later that a whole bunch of traditionalist Navajos had also seen it the same day. It was pointing in the same direction toward Four Corners. And the next day, two Navajo deities showed up and told the Navajos to get their act together, which they promptly disobeyed.
This is like the early 90s?
Yeah, it was 96.
Okay, so it was the mid-90s. I know around that time...
96.
I know, because I got a lot of Navajo friends being down here.
Mayday.
I remember, you know the corn pollen path?
Yeah, kind of, yeah.
Kind of, and they talked about that where the... There was this reappearance of some of the Kachinas that were coming back, and where these Kachinas appeared or where they walked, you would find wild corn plants growing. And I can't tell you how many people call me, I got a corn plant growing in the middle of my backyard, and they were someplace in Prescott, Arizona. And I saw these things going on all over the place with these corn plants that would just appear. They would just appear, and Lori Toy, who did the I Am America maps, called me up one morning, because she lives in Payson, and I lived right near there on a ranch, and she said, you better come over here. She says, I got 6 corn plants growing in my front yard.
All right.
So I had the driveway. And I walked in, and I said, well, you've been blessed, the Kachinas came here. But that was about that same time.
What happened May 5th was that there were two women living on Rocky Ridge, which is where Navajo Sun danced for like 50 years. And the old woman was living with her daughter-in-law. The old woman had not spoken in years.
And now this was written up in several newspapers, and the account of what happened was that there was kind of a whistle heard and a loud kind of an explosion. And old grandma had spoken in ears. She said, "We're going to have company." So the younger woman steps outside, and she sees these two beings standing above the ground in white robes in a circle of corn pollen. And they told her that the Diné better get back to their ceremonies, better get back to their language, their original set of instructions, their original diet. You know, you got 40% of them are diabetic, and I think something like 10% or 5% of the people were, something like that, a ridiculous amount of people were on dialysis, you know, just sick. They said, you either do this or, you know, ominous bad things are going to happen. So there was interesting fallout about that. And I've got some articles about that over at Wovoka.com about what happened. And, but the day before was the day I saw, my son and I saw White Eagle, and we found out 2 weeks later, we're talking to a couple of a young Navajo couple that same day, that there was a whole bunch of traditionals down around Kayenta that all saw the same White Eagle in the sky. So we thought, oh, yeah, that's weird.
Okay, but in your memory, in your experiential memory in this life, in being around countless elders and things working with this, and you were back in Tennessee, so you were with the Kutua there, okay, and now you're down in Kabul, and you're with the Kutua there, and you work with elders like I've worked with elders, you worked with RT, you knew Matt Bear.
I did.
So you knew all the storytellers, right?
Yeah.
So, did you ever hear stories about the absolute annihilation of humanity on this earth?
No.
I've never heard that. Okay.
I've heard RT talk about putting together a horseback army that would go into L.A. and
he was always talking about that. You know, armed machine guns and
oh, no, never guns. He just said there would come a time when there would be some kind of destruction, that Indians would have the opportunity to go in and do relief work and raise children that would be orphans.
Hmm. But I've never heard an Armageddon tale.
No. Never.
And well, the point I'm getting at too with this is, like, what they tried to do with the emergence of the fifth sun and the Mayan prophecies. They tried to bend it around. This is one of Humboldt's favorite peeves. They've tried to turn it around and turn it into an Armageddon scenario.
Mm-hmm.
So, and he's like, what are you talking about?
Create fear and sell books.
This is not in our prophecies. It's not the end of the world. It's a change.
It's going from
one season to another.
You got people calling white guys like Kalimann, the Mayan scholar, you know, and then mention the German name. You know, what's wrong with that picture?
the Abrantes, right?
Yeah.
The Abrantes, we come here to land on top of your pyramids?
Not really.
Heil the Führer.
Hey,
there's a lot of stuff because, you know, the Mayans talk about...
Don't be disrespectful to our next president.
Pardon me?
Don't be disrespectful to our next president.
Now. I never said that.
They're going to change the concept.
But I could show you some pictures that are freaky out.
We were watching this movie just the other day. What the heck was it called? Manchurian Candidate. Everybody's got to watch it. And be sure...
It's an excellent movie. And the scary thing is that they're telling you how things are done.
Did you look at the picture? Remember the campaign picture? It was a one-color white full-face picture of the candidate, a guy that they named Arthur, but it wasn't a picture of him. It was a picture of... Go back and watch it. It's a picture of Arnold Schwarzenegger.
I'll see you.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
It's the little yellow pill that scientists say could eliminate chronic diseases and help you live well into your hundreds.
You might be able to increase the lifespan of a mammal by 50%. And, of course, if that was a human being, then that might be in the order of 130 to 150 years.
That claim might be hard to swallow, but tonight on ABC's Primetime Live, co-anchor John Quinones takes the promising antioxidant therapy called Protandim.
I have become a guinea pig for ABC News and Primetime. It's not a drug. It's a supplement. It's called Protandim, and it's a combination of five exotic plants that have been around for centuries.
Have you discovered the fountain of youth?
I wouldn't put it that way, but we may have discovered something that will tell us a lot more about how we age, what happens biochemically, and maybe how we can slow it down.
Quinones has been taking Protandim for 2 weeks now and tells Extra,
I am sleeping better. I feel a lot better and also energized when I do wake up.
Primetime puts Protandim to the test tonight.
It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
Go back and watch that movie, and if you haven't watched it, when you see the campaign picture of Arthur, you look at that picture, which is all red, doesn't have any other colors other than red on white. That's a picture of Arnold Schwarzenegger. There's all kinds of weird things going on in that movie.
And you know, this brings about an interesting reality in that the Mayans are very aware of time. I mean, they're timekeepers. And they're also very aware of dimensional shifts. And they talk a lot about the priests who were sent into the future to rectify things that would go wrong. There are amazing writings within the Popol Vuh and the Chumbalam. They're very articulate, and they're very precise about all this. The problem with a lot of these Western interpreters that go there is they have one fellow who's willing to sit down so he can get money to feed the village, because they all live in this giant communal relationship. I mean, everything that Humbug makes goes back to the village. And they get one story from one guy based upon one thing about one particular... Well, remember when we had Humbug on?
Yeah, basically he said, hey, I know 1,000 glyphs, and the guy that they quote knows 30. You know, so what's the problem? Why do they believe him? He's got a doctor in front of his name or whatever, but...
I think there was over 2,300 glyphs.
Yeah.
And this guy bases his whole thing on 30 of them.
Yeah, that was his piece.
And so we see this going on all the time, you know, and Humbug always said, well, what are you afraid of? And he says, if we're going to this time where this Christos energy that you say is coming, he says, well, we had the Christos. He was Kosikabal. He was the pale prophet. And we go into the stories of it. And if we're going to go to this age where everything is most pure mind, and where we start to merge with our spiritual self, there cannot be any corruption. So what you're talking about in that time is an end of corruption. Why is that frightening? I think that's the scary part, because right now, everything is integrated. We're seeing all levels of life, all dimensional levels of life, they're integrating. So what does the word integrate mean? It means that you don't see one, it's not John Wayne Pilgrim.
Yeah.
It's more like Twilight Zone.
Yeah.
We have entered the world of Castaneda.
Yeah.
And we're seeing the light turn to things, and I remember a part in The Power of Silence, where he's talking to Don Juan, and there was this bush out in the desert, And he rationalizes the whole thing out because he saw this, like, buffalo wallowing in the ground and this other animal on top of it. And then he rationalizes the whole thing out, and Don Juan's letting him go through his whole little drama. And he says, what a shame that you have reasoned out the miraculous. And I think a lot of people today do that. They reason out the miraculous, and the miraculous does not happen by logical means.
Is it because nothing surprises anybody anymore?
It's not that nothing surprises them, it's that they don't want it to, they'll pay anything to do it, okay? They'll go to Sedona and pay, $3,500 a week to sit down at the feet of this New Age guru who sits there and promises all these things and burns patchouli over in a corner.
Yeah.
And, sometimes I listen to these people and I talk and I go, man, that's a pretty good drum and pony show,
I can't.
But nothing ever happened.
Yeah.
They don't ever heal anybody. They don't ever confront a demon. They don't go up to a person and tell the cancer to get out of the body and it gets out. I've seen RT do that. I've seen RT throw a stake on somebody with gangrene on their feet, and 20 minutes later he said, now get a piece of paper or something and take the piece of meat off his leg. And the leg was totally back to natural color. And all the putrefaction went into the piece of meat. Granted, RT had some strange ways of doing that.
Yep.
But I've seen native healers and native elders do that. These other guys, they're like talk shows.
It just seems like the entire New Age movement has turned into one big travel.
Yeah, it's all about, power place tours. For instance,
there was one, you and I have a mutual friend, and, back in May, this show just about went under, and he arranged for me to call a friend, and I told him, I said, we need $500 to keep this show going. I said, we're not going to ask you again. We're not going to need it again. And he said, okay, well, we got something coming in, and you'll be hearing from us. Never heard. Next thing I hear, I see a picture of this guy sitting on the floor in the Taj Mahal listening to a boombox. That's what was important to him.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all about travel to sacred places and pilgrimage. I mean, that's all fine, it's all about a person's individual needs rather than helping other people with theirs. And I was just absolutely shocked. And we were just having a horrible time back during that period of time. And New Age folks were coming on and saying, oh, well, you're not manifesting well, so, I don't want to be around you. That's just a nice way of saying, you're too poor, you're depressing me, goodbye. It's just insane.
Yeah, but I heard that Yeshua didn't teach in the houses of Herod.
Yeah, no, he didn't.
And I heard that he went out amongst the working people, and he picked a fisherman to be the head of his group. And the one guy who did have any education wound up becoming Judas Iscariot.
Well, you and I are certainly reprobates, and now we know why he loves us.
it's just become this, you can't theatricalize, if that's a word, you can't theatricalize spirit, Spirit comes and does things, and even when you're running the ceremony, you have no idea what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And sometimes you're sitting there in total awe of what's happening. Because you it's just unexplainable sometimes. You just have the right element of people who come without agendas, and they come to really call spirit in, and these absolutely amazing things. It's like being in a Steven Spielberg movie.
Yeah, and
you're watching these things go on, you're like, wow.
It got started in such a fine direction, and then it seemed like it splintered into 300 different, 400 different movements, and then it just kind of drifted from there.
Well, it's like all things. The minute that we turned it into enterprises to make money,
yeah,
then it dissipated instantly.
Yeah.
You know, and it just dissipated instantly. And then the quality of people started to change. They got, you know, there were so many elders out there doing absolutely amazing things. Not that they were doing anything, but they were just facilitating the energy. But these amazing things happened, and then what happened is, you know, I'm going to put it this way. Grandpa Wallace said to me in 1994, I just came back from Sears Roebuck buying him a wardrobe because he was wearing the same shirt for 3 weeks. And I said, you know, Grandpa, we're going to get you some clothes. So we went to Sears. And it was amazing. He really knew how to pick out good clothes.
Because after 3 days, guests and fish begin to sink, right?
Yeah, that's right, you know. Anyway, you know, so Wallace is there, he goes, you know, he says, you know, we don't have to worry about what we say. I said, what do you mean? He says, well, he says, we already told him everything that was going to happen. He said, but these Washichu, they want a new show every week.
Yep.
And he says, you know, what's to say after the flood?
Yep.
You know, all we can give you is more pictures of the flood. And, you know, it was like, you know, I think people just sort of like, you know, shook their heads. They didn't know sometimes where Wallace was coming from because he was Aoka. But I understand now exactly where it was coming from. It was like, no matter what you present, no matter what you have, I mean, everything's been said. Let's go to Hopezilla. Let's talk to Hopi Sinem. It's all there. Now they're just watching it unfold. They're watching it unfold. And I think right now, we are watching the pathway to Armageddon. We are watching the beginnings of the purification. And we're watching things like this tsunami over in Thailand and India and Sumatra. We're seeing what they told us would happen begin to happen. And it's not about this final ending and punishment. It's about, okay, let's look at it this way. Isn't it amazing that that happened there and it didn't happen to a major industrial city?
Yeah, I mean...
Can you imagine the chaos if something like that happened?
Well, why,
to
why,
Los Angeles?
Why did Creator pick the poorest people in the world to dump on this time?
Well, I get into that a lot, too. And I think it's because the poor people have faith and they come right back.
Well, you know, what does it say in the Bible? It says that the those that he loves, he chastens. You know, so there have to be a few people vacationing in Thailand. But, you know, basically...
You know, amongst Native people, there's a belief, and I'm going to use Cheyenne Dog Soldier, for example. When you purify yourself and you're standing in your power, death is just a doorway. And when these things happen, I believe that they happen for the drama of everybody watching it. Not necessarily for the people that are there. The suffering, we can show faces like that from the conquerings of Genghis Khan to the slaughters of the Haudenosaunee of all the Mandans and the curly-haired blue-eyed Indians. Mass graves are here, they are there. We can show it from the English with their smallpox blankets and the diseases and common colds wiping out entire tribes in South America. We can see this, you know. Most people, for instance, don't realize that when Chief Columbus came over here, and he lost his way, and that they got pissed at him because he was supposed to bring back opium, and he didn't find opium, so that the lords and the princes and the royalty couldn't get stoned, and they didn't know what to do because they threw out the Arabs because they knew he was going to find it. And the Arabs are the ones that were supplying them with the opium. Did you know that story?
No.
Oh, it's a whole thing. Queen Ferdinand, King Ferdinand and Isabella, they were opium freaks.
Huh.
Just like Wild Bill Hickok, you know?
Yep.
They had opium dens and stuff like that back then.
and it was the mainstay of the economy. Now, one of the main reasons why they financed Columbus was because he was going to find the other way to India and bring back the opium at a better price, okay? And then Spain would then control the flow of opium throughout Europe, because they were using it at that time, and Illuminati and all, they were using it to gain their visions.
Yeah.
Okay? Anyway, so when Chief Columbus comes over here, you know, what people don't realize is there was like 50 million or more Native American people. Tribes were tremendous. The cultures were all interlinked. There were trade routes that went up to Hudson's Bay, that went up to Alaska, that they traded as far over the Pacific. They traded with the Chinese. That's how they got jade for the Maya. All these things are there. They don't, and then these guys came in, and within 200 years, better than 80% of the people died from disease. Because they brought with them their diseases and their pestilence. And that's what wiped everybody out. And that's what put the big fear into these little white guys, these monkey guys, these Washichu that were coming. And they never told the truth. And you know what? Nothing's changed.
Nope.
Just take a look at the elections. Nothing's changed. Still the same. I think that they should make these guys go out and do a Sundance before they go qualify for election. That might do something.
Nothing.
Or at least make them go to a real Nippy Lodge.
Shoshana's telling me that the European Union wants to outlaw, what, 300 herbal substances?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, isn't that great?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, oh, yeah, not outlaw me. You have to get them off. You have to get them, like, prescription.
Well, now they're trying to turn everything into a drug.
How are they going to meter air? I mean, they're going to get all the water.
They'll figure it out. They already have it in the Japanese airports.
Eventually,
you go up and you put coins in the machine and you get oxygen.
Eventually, they've got this wastewater management plan here for the Ozarks. I mean, how do you pump sewage up and down mountains, okay? And but the thing that's buried in this legislation is that they're going to put meters on all the wells. Well, that's you know, it's not about wastewater; it's about what's about water.
Well, they'll probably do it the same way they did drugs in the beginning of the 20th century. What most people don't realize is that at the beginning of the 20th century, the end of the 19th century, there were absolutely no laws here about drugs, okay? Number one, it was considered unconstitutional to tell someone what they could or could not put into their body, okay? And so they couldn't figure out how they were going to get around this. So what they did was they came in and they said, ah, what? And people who are going around distributing this are making a profit, so we're losing out on taxes. Now that's why the Treasury Department moved in and took over all the raids on the opium dens. They took on the raids of all the companies that were putting cocaine in Coca-Cola and all the other products that they had that anybody could easily get through a Sears Roebuck catalog. Anybody can go into a Sears, or anybody can go into a Sears Roebuck catalog and get hypodermics, morphine, opium, you name it, cocaine, they could get it and have it delivered in brown paper right to their door. And it became an incessant problem amongst the wealthy people in this country to such an extent that they decided they had to start doing something, and they turned it around so that it became an economic thing with not collecting taxes. After the Civil War, they had a massive epidemic of heroin and morphine addicts because they were freely giving, I mean, they were just going in there with kitchen knives, axes, and whatever they had, bayonets, and cutting people's legs off, okay? Because they didn't have time to operate and take the bullet out, it was easier to just take the leg off.
I'll see you. Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
It is so great to have our friend Marie Osmond back here on GMA, and she has some important information about making sure your family is prepared for natural disaster. She's the new national spokesperson for Wise Company, which makes dehydrated and freeze-dried emergency foods and food storage products. She's here to tell us about that. Marie, you've been given the opportunity to endorse probably 9 billion things over the course of your career.
True.
Why the Wise Company?
The reason I wanted to do it is because it's affordable. You can eat a meal for a dollar. It's less than school lunch. It's affordable, but really, look at what's been going on with Sandy and Katrina. I mean, what was it, $78 billion of damage done just here in New York and
right.
New Jersey.
So what is this?
What it is it's emergency meals, and you know, it's not your grandmother's kind, not the beans and rice and the gross chicken-tasting garbage. This is lasagna and really good stuff, and I swear to you, why am I here talking about this? Because I know it's going to save thousands and thousands and thousands of lives. You put it under your bed, it's convenient, stick it in your closet. If something happens, I have it in my car. All you do is you open it and you add water. You don't even have to add hot water.
Right.
And it's affordable, it's convenient, it tastes really good. Taste the peaches, they're fantastic.
This is a peach?
But they're different than every other company because it's like dehydrated, and freeze-dried, and they combine whatever. I swear it's fantastic. Just try it.
I'm dying right now. Marie
Put it
Osmond.
Under your bed. Put it in your closet. Give it for Christmas to people and save lives.
Thank you very much. Will you tell Donnie that we said we hope his rear feels better?
Well, you know, it's kind of a bummer, but I'll tell him.
No, Marie Osmond, great having you on.
It's
the Wise
so fun
Company.
To be here.
Great to be with you.
It's always fun to be here. This is a great place.
All right.
Friends, this is Will Bluewater. If you'd like to find out more about Wise Foods, visit wisefoods.org.
And so they had all these diseases, and all these guys were bleeding, and, you know, they had hundreds of thousands of people with missing body parts. And they just turned them all into morphine and heroin addicts. And as a matter of fact, they called it the army's disease. That's what they called it. And they built up these huge, that's when they put up the veterans hospitals. And the primary reason for the veterans hospitals were that they had a place to deal with all these addicts. I mean, this is the real story of what went on. And so, They took all of these things that were once considered gifts of the gods, sacred things from the heavens, sacred sacraments in certain ceremonies by different third world peoples. And all of these things became these debauchering, evil, dark, sinister. It was all about money. It was all about money. One of the biggest people behind all of this stuff were the English. They made fortunes, billions and billions on the opium. They even went to war in the Boxer Rebellion against China for the control over the opium.
Well, see, they had to have something that they could take over. So they started taking silver over there, but they needed something that they could take over there and sell. So they go to India first, pick up the opium, take it to China, and they literally brought down a Chinese dynasty.
Absolutely. It was all about money. It was all about, you know, and I think that that's some of the things that people have to really understand why some of these third world countries have such deep-seated hatred for us.
Tell the people about Atahualpa and Pizarro. You know that story?
Mm-hmm. That's a good story.
You want to tell it? You want me to tell it?
You tell it.
Well, Pizarro conquered Peru, and Atahualpa was the last Inca emperor, and what was demanded of him was that, well, they kidnapped him and said, okay, if you fill up this room, well, I think it was once with gold and twice with silver, we'll let you go. So Atahualpa said, okay, and he made the arrangements, and within a few days they filled it all up. And they said, well, we lied, and they read him his death warrant and strangled him to death. But as he was dying, he cursed the white man that the coca plant, which was tonic for the Indian, would be a curse to the white man. Guess what happened? We went through, to a certain extent, I guess we're probably still going through, you know, the cocaine
Well, then we had the Emperor of Panama, who was, you know, who's now sitting in a prison somewhere in Florida.
Yeah.
Or a mega.
Never figured that one out.
You know, it's the misuse.
Yeah.
All things, you know, when we go into the sacred things, and when you go and you learn about Chanupa, the sacred pipe, or you learn about these different things, and the elders share them, you get to a level where they decide, you know, like, okay, you've been carrying wood for 10 years, carrying water, you fed everybody buffalo, you've been doing the right things, and you kept your mouth shut, so now we're going to tell you level two.
Uh-huh.
And level two is, if you discipline yourself and spend another 5 years listening to exactly to what we say, then you will know how to do this. But the thing is that you will find out that doing this can go both ways. You can bring great abundance, great healing. You can bring death. The tools are the tools. And the tools are the sacred plants. The tools were used for awakening. They were used in sacred sacrament and high ceremony. They were not used for recreational purposes. Everything was done with a purpose, you know. It's like even from the symbols that they wore on their clothes and put on their temples and put on their buttons and cards and their staffs. Everything had a reason. Everything told a story. Everything had a purpose. There wasn't any chance, anything. Today we have logos and symbols that are just there, you know. And they become icons of the new corporate gods, you know. And I think that one of the amazing things that we're seeing right now in our society, you know, is that the world is threatened now, the free peoples of the world are threatened by the corporations. They've taken over the governments. They've taken over the medical industry.
They've taken
over the religions.
Abraham Lincoln prophesied it.
It's all corporations.
Yep. They came about during that period of time. And it's in my books. It's in the Encyclopedia for the Western Hemisphere. He talks about it. He said he knew the corporations were going to be the death of this country.
Well, they're here now. Welcome to 1984.
Yeah.
I mean, we now have a new, because of national security and the control of terrorism, within the next 2 years, everyone will have the federal identification card.
Yeah.
All new babies being born in hospitals are inserted with a chip.
Biometrics, there is to be measured.
Because in case you get sick, we have to be able to help you.
Yeah.
And this way, when you come over the border, we'll know who you are right away. We'll have a special line. And you just have to go over there and wave your hand over it, because the mark of the beast will be put either on your hand or in your forehead, remember? That's what it says. Now, the mark of the beast, 666, it just means a measure of gold. That's what it is.
What it is. It's Solomon's number. He had 666 talents of silver and gold. Mm-hmm. And back in the early 80s, I was listening to Southwest Radio Church, and somebody said that all the business licenses in Jerusalem got that number on it. Well, it was Solomon's number, so it's, plus it's a really useful computer matrix.
Well, yes, and it's also, it's purely a financial number.
Mm-hmm.
So it would have to be something that was utilized by the money lenders. That's why everything you have has a barcode. There's nothing you can buy anymore that has no barcode. Everything is worked off computer. There is no money. Everything's computer.
Well, somebody was trying to use cash fairly recently, and I can't remember. I heard the story, came over email, and it said they were somewhere and tried to use cash. They said, "Oh, we're gonna have to look at your ID. You know, use cash. Get your ID, please."
Yeah.
That's new.
Well, I just get confused with the new money because it always the same. You can't tell the difference between a 20 and a 50 and a 10. And the coins, they don't feel like money anymore. They're all this play money. And nickels look like quarters. I mean, you know, it gets very confusing.
This all happened when I was in the fifth grade, and we knew something was up back then. Mm-hmm. 64. We knew that, hey, this is different.
That's when they took the real ice cream away from your school lunch. And they made you eat that disgusting macaroni and cheese.
Yeah.
And those hamburgers that they saved from the carnival.
Yeah.
Remember those things?
Oh, yeah. I got the...
And you can put them outside, even the ants wouldn't go for them.
I got the lights to taste them when they're on.
You know, and you put them out there and the crows wouldn't eat it. The crow isn't going to eat it. There's got to be something wrong with it, you know?
Same.
So...
Hey, when are they coming for you and me?
Well, they already kind of came. I'm a shapeshifter. I'm a shapeshifter, you know, and so it's like, you know, but that's part of why I stopped being so public. And the ceremonies, things that I do now, and I do with people, we do them in private. It got too crazy, brother. It just got too crazy. You know, and it wasn't helping people anymore.
We don't go anywhere to anything anymore.
And so, you know, now I work with families and individuals and groups and people who have problems. And that's it. Or sometimes I just get the occasional gift of working with some elders, you know, and the 20,000 people that know more than me. And I get to have them pour water and I get to learn something, you know. So that's all part of the new energy that's coming in. Now, some people get confused. Some people get upset when you say Christos. Some people I had run in fear when I say Jesus because of all the generations of torture and everything, dogma by the church. But I think one of the things that people start becoming aware of is that these are universal terminologies. Christos is a universal terminology. All cultures talk about the Christos. They talk about the higher realm. They talk about God-man. Not meaning God-man, I am God. Meaning I am of God. I am a child of God. I am a child of the earth. People now are starting to change their terminologies and understand the meaning of, you know, the sacred mother. You know, so it's mother, father, God. They're starting to understand the male and female attributes of the sun. Because the sun births plasma. The plasma then goes out to our solar system, and the solar system is bathed in new life form. So that it replaces the old, degenerative, decomposing, dying life form, and now new consciousness can take hold.
And now
the Mayans talk about this.
Physicists, you know, within a year, last year or so, discovered that space isn't empty. That there's matter out there, but about 90% of it is something they call dark matter. But it's still matter.
That's right. And so we're moving inch by inch into an understanding. One of the things that I see going on this year is that because of these catastrophes, and, you know, it's like, it's really not any worse than anything you watch in any movie. If I turn on the movies, what do you see? You see murder, you see guys with guns, you see rape, you see all this stuff going on. That's what it's all about. Now, we don't know why the kids are running out trying to get a hold of automatic weapons and running around the streets of L.A. We don't know. Could it have something to do with the movies?
Mm-hmm.
So what we're seeing here is traumatic, is horrible. And it is a true catastrophe. And things like this are going to start happening to change people's way of thinking. They have to have the way they think change. They've had it come easy. They've had it come with blessings. The messengers have come. The elders have spoken. And nobody paid any attention. Everybody thought it was really cute to have Grandfather Thomas Bunyaka come out and tell stories. It was entertaining. Oh, can we have him at our gathering? But they didn't pay attention. I remember one of the last times I saw Thomas Bunyaka was at an event in L.A. He was real little, remember?
Next to John Hoyt and Liz Taylor, right?
Yeah.
I got that picture.
He's there talking, and he starts talking about how... He says, you know, what's going on in the earth right now is like you're coming back to Grandma's house. And Grandma went away for a couple of days, and you threw a big party, and the house is a wreck. And now Grandma is mad, and he started pounding on the podium, and he knocked the microphone off the stand. Okay? She is saying, pay attention to me. And we're moving into a time now where she's saying, pay attention to me. I'm talking to you. You're filled with diseases. There's corruption everywhere. Even your language is corrupt. Your religions are corrupt. Your government is corrupt. Your mortgage brokers are everything in your world. Even the food you eat is killing you. There's nothing. You can't even go out and get clean water anymore.
Well, maybe that's what Isaiah meant by all the tables are full of vomit right now. There's no clean beans to lay your head.
So she turns around, and that whole thing, that whole tsunami, didn't take very long, did it?
No.
It's like, it'll take more money than it took us to run Saddam Hussein, the little street ruffian, out of Iraq, to fix everything that she did in 5 minutes, than it will take to do the whole war there.
Yeah.
In one fell swoop, one big kick up of Grandma doing her dance.
Yep.
She kicked up, she hit her moccasins hit the ground, and that was it.
That's it.
Okay, and it's not over yet, because now we're going to see the disease, the pestilence, the cholera, the Ebola. We're going to see all this stuff. And then we're going to see this stuff merge with the genetically created pathogens. You know, they created all of this stuff, they messed around with all of this stuff in their science labs, and they put these things out because they were going to use it in biological warfare and how to control things. And, you know, they talked about, you know, okay, here's an interesting story, true story. A couple of years ago, they got together and realized there were some people who were really, Greenpeace people probably, they were really concerned with, and they knew the truth behind the so-called brucellosis epidemic that the buffalo were threatening the cattle industry, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It had nothing to do with the buffalo. The buffalo, one out of every 2,000 buffalo came down with the brucellosis. The immune system in the buffalo was too strong, so the buffalo didn't really die from it, so the buffalo became called a carrier, okay? It came from genetic experimentation in Canada with crops, where they were experimenting with nanotechnology and crossing plant molecules and human blood molecules so that they could come up with various ancillary things, including a new kind of intelligence for a new computer, which would basically have these elements in these cells placed in the memory banks of it. Okay?
Hey,
they came out and they experimented with the wheat. The wheat went bad. And so I remember, like, in the early 90s, driving through Montana, and you would see these clouds of smoke the whole of Montana. And they would go all down through Utah, and they would even be in Arizona. Okay? Smoke. And they would say, well, they're burning their crops up north. They go, burning their crops? They think they just burnt Alberta, you know? I mean, how can you... They tried burning it and destroying it. And what happened is the fire didn't kill the spores. So the spores would come up and the stuff would start growing wild in the grass, okay? Then they turned around and they put this stuff, and I have all the documentation on this. Should someone be interested, please come to my website. Contact me. I'll get it for you. So you realize this isn't just kicking up hot air.
What's the evil?
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
There is a growing movement of people who are deciding to make their lives better. At LifeVantage, we're in the business of change, of improving quality of life globally and restoring the ability to make dreams a reality. Your quest for personal fulfillment begins here. Our flagship product, Protandem, the Nrf2 Synergizer, is the key to fighting oxidative stress. This daily supplement, comprised of natural ingredients, activates the body's antioxidant enzymes to eliminate free radicals, which cause oxidative stress. Protandem has been tested in the laboratories of renowned universities, such as The Ohio State University, LSU, and the University of Colorado, Denver. These studies found on PubMed.gov, the U.S. government's online scientific library, clinically show that Protandem reduces oxidative stress.
When I saw that Protandem reduces oxidative stress by 40% in 30 days, I was all in for the rest of my life.
Everyone begs us for science as an industry. Where's your proof? Well, we have that also.
LifeVantage is devoted to advancing Nrf2 science and leading the fight against oxidative stress.
It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now. Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
Wow, nonstop energy.
Well, I cannot even imagine. And just for example, last night, you did a show last night that was 90 minutes starting at 7:30.
That's right.
Then you went through that. Then you came here. You're here this morning.
That's right.
Doing all of this.
It's nonstop. I don't sleep anymore.
No. All right, so where do you get the energy? Seriously, I mean, look at you.
Well,
I mean, we've known each other a long time. Yeah. We've passed. You don't ever get older.
Well, thank you. It's quite funny because, you know, people are kind of shocked when they hear that I'm 54 years old, and they say, how do you keep your youth? I have found something, Dr. Phil, that I think is the closest thing to the fountain of youth.
Oh, you do have a secret.
I have a secret, and I've never really talked about it. Well, I've been doing this for the last 2 years. It's called Protandem, and it works. And I'm telling everybody about this.
You feel differently.
I do.
Because you're running around like a chicken with your head cut off.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you're hitting the times. You're getting where you're supposed to be.
I have
to
be on the spot all the time.
Now, I've got three sisters, and we get along great 1,500 miles apart. I cannot imagine.
It takes me 1,600 miles.
Yeah, but I can't imagine working with my sister every day. What do you do when you have disagreements? Because you have to have disagreements, right? Because
well,
you're both producers.
Yeah, we're both producers, and that's typical because we're both type A. And you're going to butt heads. What's really interesting about the Donnie Marie duo is that it doesn't really matter how much we butt the heads when that curtain goes.
It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
And so then they turned around and they said, okay, they couldn't make bread out of it because the flour wouldn't rise. From the wheat. So then they took it and they put it into flour, this is God's honest truth, and they gave it away to the Indians and the reservations, okay? Through the, you know, various Indian relief organizations.
Right.
Because Indians made tortillas and fry bread, okay?
Yeah.
And so they put it in there and he was feeding it to all of them for a while.
Okay? Maybe this should have been the real plot for the movie Canadian Bacon.
The
insidious threat.
And then they took this shit, this garbage, and they still couldn't get rid of it. And they, you know, they had all these farmers up there. I mean, you know, millions of acres of this stuff growing. And they were experimenting with these different fields. And it didn't matter which experiment or what combination of things. All this stuff was tainted, polluted crop. It was all grains. So then they took it and they put it in the animal feed. Hello, Purina? Ralston, okay? And they fed it to the frickin' cows and the chickens. So now what happens is the cows go out and they eat their grain and they feed them this stuff and now they're doing what cows do, you know, if you ever walk through the field, you're going to step in a cow patty, right? So the cows are doing this stuff all over the field and these spores are growing out of the cow patties and intermingling and interbreeding with the wild grasses. So now now it's spread from the cows to the elk and the deer. It was all part of a government or international
experimentation on grains, and it was an experiment that went wild and out of control.
Well, they had to figure out a way to get rid of 5.5 billion of us. They sure didn't have enough bullets and bombs to do it.
Yeah,
they didn't. There wouldn't have to be anything left for them to live on, so. But they had to get creative, didn't they?
Yeah, and then they go around and they say to people, well, all we have to do is eliminate some of the buffalo. There's too many buffalo. Okay, so, you know, like everybody was like, well, it's really kind of cold. It's the middle of the winter, you know? And they said, we're going to put a $500 bounty on every buffalo you take down. Now, ranchers up there, and I know ranchers that called me up and said, you got to come up here and do something. I said, well, I don't know what to do. I said, RT suggested that we fly up there with helicopters and Uzis. But they had people pulling up on their ranches, these new recruits for the forest agency up there, pulling up on people's ranches. You're sitting there on Sunday morning having breakfast, and 12 trucks pull up from the Forest Service, and they start shooting the buffalo walking through your backyard. This is how out of control and insane the whole thing got.
Well,
so anyway, they turned around, and there were some, you know, ecologists and natural life people that said, wait a minute, you know, this is this horrible thing. The buffalo aren't carrying it. And someone's going to prove it in court, and you're going to have a $1 billion lawsuit. And we're going to sue the state of Montana, okay?
The people here in South Park.
Wait. They called in the Russian scientists, whose names will remain anonymous. They called in the Russian scientists. Why did they call in the Russian scientists? Because during the 50s, they developed the strains of Brucellus that are now killing the cattle, infecting the elk and the deer. And they did it as part of a biological warfare plan, method, in which they were going to take over and annihilate the population of the United States. Because we were all big bread eaters. Now, isn't that wild? I mean, so, doesn't it go back to what I'm saying about the apocalypse, the unveiling? We are seeing the unveiling, and these guys just turn around and hide, you know? And I'm going to stop before I start getting political.
Just amazing. Well, people here in the Ozarks remember back during the depths of the Depression, there was some kind of disease that was going through the cattle somewhere else in the country, at open mouth, I believe. It wasn't going on here, but that didn't stop Franklin Delano Roosevelt from ordering all cattle in the Ozarks from being murdered, even though they weren't sick. So it's tough getting a Democrat vote around here even today. They remember, and they never were. The Constitution says the government takes something they got paid for. They never paid for it.
Well, we're going to be seeing a lot of things, and we're going to be seeing a lot of disease. We're going to be seeing a lot of sickness. To those who hold on to the Judeo-Christian myth, they're about to release the Red Horseman.
Yeah.
Because things are so out of control. They're trying to keep a lid on it, but the hospitals are already having problems. The emergency rooms are having problems. They're already, the problems that people are aware of is that they make these vaccines, and they tell the companies, you can make this, but you can't make any profit. So then nobody makes it. And then they go, we have a shortage of vaccine. And then they do things like, well, you know, but we now have 1 million other shots coming in from this vaccine from last year, which is the flu inhaler. And everybody forgets that last year they put out a warning about don't take the flu inhaler because it causes you to get the flu. They pulled it off the market. Okay? But now they're giving you the same thing back, okay? We're seeing these things happening, and we are going to have to get into natural means of health preventative things. And I think now's about the time, because in the next week or two here, we're going to come out with a means to do that, which will be available on your site. We've talked about this.
Right.
And we're just about ready to put this out where people can come and work with healers and work with naturopaths and find out what the alternatives are. If you can't get this, there's this. If you can't do this, there's that. Hopefully there'll be enough people who will support it, because people, it takes money to pay people to work in fields. They have to do these things by hand. They have to do these things without chemicals. And it's hard to find places, it's usually very small places, where they grow these things that are not already contaminated with 70 years of fertilizer. I think we're going to be making that available through the Prophecy Keeper site and also through my site. Because we've reached the point where the doctors in the hospital will not be able to take care of it. Period.
Yeah,
you'll get turned down if you do not have the mark.
Yeah.
If you do not have the mark, then you cannot take the vaccine.
So we watched, there's a movie out right now on the video. It was a BBC movie. It's called Code 54. You get a chance to watch it, because it's a futuristic thing about apparently they use disease to control people and their movements. And there are people that lived in, and there are people that lived out. And you couldn't get in unless you had something called a cover, which was kind of like a biological passport. And really kind of interesting. We've kind of
read a national ID card?
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
With a little picture of somebody on the back that says, my name is W, and I approve this person.
Tim Robbins, it was a BBC film, but Tim Robbins was the lead in it. It was called Code 54. If you get a chance to watch it, it was not advertised on TV. It's just one of those things that I believe it's video only, but we rented it by accident. It's a good movie. Kind of plotting, you know, English movies, but it's really kind of a wake-up call. Because it's,
well, I think something else that people should get is, and I could furnish you with the link from the guys that put the book out, and you can sell it through your site. You'd be like a bookstore then. It's called Sweet Misery.
I haven't heard of that.
It's a CD, and it's about a poisoned world. And what it is about aspartame and all these artificial sweeteners that are causing a whole malady of problems in people today. Old and young. They're giving this stuff to kids in school, for crying out loud. And that's why we're seeing all these cases of ADD. And then they're giving them Prozac to counteract what that's doing. And all these people are walking and growing up genetically damaged forever. Never mind the diseases that it causes, the conditions to come around and bring everything from fibromyalgia to Alzheimer's disease to heart ailments to arthritis, rheumatoid arthritis, and a whole bunch of brain and nerve disorders. And they're putting this thing in everything. They're putting it in candy. They're putting it in soda. They're putting it in cereal. They're putting it in soup. There's almost nothing you can't buy that has a sweet taste to it that doesn't have the stuff in it. Okay? It's a very good, very, very good, well-executed documentary on what it is, because people need to know. You have to be aware. If you don't want to grow a garden and all you want to do is go to the local supermarket where chickens grow inside plastic bags, and cows, hamburgers come in boxes, they don't walk on fields, then you have to read this stuff, because you have to know what you're eating.
It's so nice here in this little town. We get our fresh eggs delivered by the egg man every week. And when the chickens get old enough, they get butchered, and we go over and we'll get 70, 800 pounds, throw it in the freezer. And
I hear that things are so pure in Cuba.
They're not that good.
Right, Fidel Castro orders his eggs from there.
It is
the only place in America that Castro will buy chickens.
It's pretty nice here, you know. It's economically depressed area, but man, this is horse country. This is the milk distribution hub here, and 14 of the largest, 14 of the 15 largest springs in the world, and then 70 miles.
And goats. You have a lot of goats.
Yep. Goats, chickens.
You have one of the most famous goat growers in the world
coming
here.
Yep. Dick Bauman.
Dick Bauman, the goat man.
Yep.
Not since Abraham had the fields of goats been so wild.
That's right.
As Dick Bauman and his fleet of Angora.
Well, here's the guy. Actually, they're just a good old-fashioned, like you see in the Middle East,
20 years ago, he went to...
You're better than Watch Dogs.
He said, what can I do to help build up the kingdom? And it's kind of like, you know, Bill Cosby, but this time the Lord told him to get a goat. And I mean, here's a guy he's a doctoral fellow, and has master's education, and sophisticated guy. And he said, well, Lord, what's my second choice? And the Lord said, get a goat. He said, okay, Lord. He says, I'll tell you, he starts bargaining with the Lord. He says, tell you what, he says, if you'll bless my herd, I'll have the finest herd of goats in the United States in 5 years. And he did it in 4.